Hey, man, what are you doing?
I'm just lying here relaxing in a stream. I call it streaming.
Okay, you know that word already has another meaning, right?
AFA Streaming offers free and subscription video content. Titles like By Design, The God Who Speaks, and Asbury Revival, Desperate for More. You'll also find video versions of AFR programs. Visit AFA.net and click on Streaming. Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Thursday, May the 23rd, 2024. In studio with me today is Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And in KCKS is our good friend Ray Pritchard. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. You know, yesterday, I don't know where I was during the day here at the office or whatever, and somebody showed me a Facebook picture of Ray Pritchard in Branson, Missouri. And you were at some breakfast place and the largest pancake I've ever seen on a plate.
We were at a breakfast place in Branson called Billy Gale's. If you've ever been to Branson, you've been to Billy Gale's. It's
right.
A massive place. And the pancakes. Now, I got to say, I was warned. I ordered the short stack, and twice the waitress said, I don't think you need to do that.
She warned you.
She warned me twice. Yeah. Then she just shook her head. There were two pancakes. They were the size of hubcaps. I mean, I gave away all I could to the rest of my family, and I still, we were basically about halfway through the top one. That's as much as I could do.
But it's called the short stack, which when you say short stack, you're thinking, well, who can't eat a short stack?
Right? Yeah, that's a kid's portion.
That's right.
Have you ever had that, Fred? You've been to Branson, though.
I love pancakes, but yeah. No. Thanks for the warning about the short stack.
Yeah, that thing was, I was going to say, I don't know, take an hour to eat that thing. But did you get half of it down?
But between me and one of my grandsons and one of my granddaughters,
we split it up.
We got about half of one down.
Well, it looked like y'all were having a big time. We thought you were out in Oregon. When are you going out to
I'll be there in a couple weeks. A couple weeks to be out there starting the summer conference thing out in Oregon. But this, you know, last Friday, Tim, finished my radiation for prostate cancer, treatment 28. And so we went down to
celebration.
Big celebration. We ended up with some of our grandkids in Branson, did the whole mini golf deal.
Right.
And that's how we ended up at Billy Gale's the other morning. Just, you know, just go for it.
Did y'all go see a show?
We went to the Titanic Museum there in Branson.
What'd you think about that?
It's one of the best museums. Big surprise. Big surprise, because in Branson, you never know what you're going to get. Big surprise. One of the best museums I have ever been to in my life. Hmm. Tremendous. Big surprise.
What do they have in there? You thought it was going to be a gimmick.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I know what you're saying.
But whoever owns that spent millions of dollars bringing together the artifacts from the Titanic.
And it was worth going to see if you're in Branson. Okay.
It was very moving to be there. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, cool.
But you probably need to go. You need to allow 4 or 5 hours after the pancakes. What's the name of that breakfast?
Billy Gale's, and it's huge. It's like three Cracker Barrels put together in size. You know?
Wow. Okay.
Was there also a peg game?
No, there was no peg game, but there was a car hanging from the ceiling. One of these antique Model T cars hanging from the ceiling. I like that kind of stuff. You know?
Dude, tell me about the Cracker Barrel peg game. Is that what you're talking
about?
Yes,
and I've been a doofus since 1990 something.
So you play them all. You go to Cracker Barrel.
I'm not very good.
Just to play that, right?
I do.
Yeah,
I can get it down to three. That's as far as I can go.
Three.
Yeah. You know.
All right. So we appreciate everybody listening to the program today, and hope you're having a nice Thursday. And let's see, we got Steve Paisley Jordahl will be with us the next hour. A lot happening in the news. What's the first story you got there, Chris?
A big story something that's going to be unfolding all day through the evening, and Lord willing, we will be here to cover it on AFN.net, radio and print-wise. Former President Donald Trump is having a rally tonight in the South Bronx. It begins at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. We do have some stories about this on our website already, AFN.net. You might think, or one might think, Trump is perhaps wasting his time here. It's a very liberal city in a blue state, very blue state. But I've got some reaction here from many New Yorkers that are welcoming the former president in these bad economic times with opening arms. Clip three.
I think that's amazing. I think it's epic.
That's the best thing ever.
Are you going to go?
Yeah.
How will he be received here?
Open arms.
Really?
Open arms. Everybody gonna show him love. You come show love, they're gonna show you love right back.
If I do see him, you know, it's a what's up, and thank you for doing what you did.
It's 50-50, honestly. People are gonna have some love and hate. Some people do love him, but honestly, I still prefer him. That's better than Joe Biden.
Now, someone who does have, quote, hate for the former president is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I have an image. I'll share this on our Facebook page as well. Earlier this morning, she did what's called a quote tweet. Apparently, they're getting a lot of rain there in the area where Trump's going to have the rally tonight, to the point that it's going to be a, quote, muddy mess tonight for the Trump rally. She responded to that on X, formerly known as Twitter, with the words, quote, God is good. So AOC is thanking God for making it a muddy mess today for people in the Bronx.
Okay, so the Bronx, that's, you know, that's not Republican country.
No.
So... we'll see. Now, for President Trump, I will say this: he's not going to win the Bronx, okay? And he's not going to win New York, and he's not going to win New York State. However, that's not why he's doing this. I don't think he's doing this for the national coverage that it gets and the attention that he gets, mm-hmm. and the fact that they say, "Well, he'll go into the heart of the beast," mm-hmm. so to speak, the Democrat-controlled country, and do a rally. Which so the thought process, I would guess, politically behind it is not to win the Bronx, but to say to America, "Hey, I'm because it's New York City, it's going to get a lot of attention." Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, Democrats at the election night will win the Bronx and will win New York City. However, I think there is movement within the communities like we see in the Bronx towards Trump. And I watched some of the interviews with these folks in the Bronx this morning, and they're saying first of all, they're offended by Democrats, by Biden, who think, you know, Democrats think they own blacks and Hispanics in these communities. And a lot of these people are saying, you don't own us. The other thing is that a lot of them were saying life was better under Donald Trump than it has been under Biden. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks, whether it's New York or whether it's Chicago or some other areas, that have now been inundated by these people coming across our borders illegally, a lot of these folks, local residents, are upset with what these illegals and what the cities are doing for these illegals, because they're cheating them out of programs, cheating the local residents, American citizens, out of programs. So that's another reason they're upset.
Yeah.
A lot of these folks are paying more for groceries. Mm-hmm. They're paying more for gas, and they're blaming Joe Biden. So there is, like you say, Tim, I don't think Joe Biden is worried about losing the Bronx, but there is movement within these black communities, Hispanic communities, towards Donald Trump. A lot of the networks did not show this, but during Trump's New York trial in the last several weeks, there have been huge numbers of supporters outside the court waiting for him to come out each day and showing support for him. So there is some movement within those communities, within Democrat-controlled cities, towards Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Ray.
There's a lot of working class guys and gals, a lot of working class union folks in New York City who are part of Donald Trump's natural audience. Fred, you're right. I mean, the Dems are going to carry New York City. But I think Trump is making a statement. He's saying, I've got my people everywhere. And I am not afraid to go to the Bronx. He's gonna pick up support in the Bronx. He's going to pick up support in Queens. He's not going to do much in Manhattan, but we always knew that. He's not going to do a whole lot in Brooklyn. He's going to do something in Staten Island. I think it's just his way of saying, my people are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he's right. There are a lot of, you know, back in 2016, he put together that coalition that carried Pennsylvania, that carried Michigan, that carried Wisconsin, that did really well up in Minnesota. Those are the kind of people going to be coming out to this rally tonight, and I hope the rain stops so that he has a typical big, huge turnout in the Bronx. That'd be good for his campaign, I think.
Next story, Chris.
Someone has endorsed or said she will vote for Donald Trump. We also have this on our website. So the same day Trump's planning a rally in New York's South Bronx, Nikki Haley says that she will vote for Donald Trump, but she does think that he needs to do more to win over people like her. Clip 9.
So I will be voting for Trump. Having said that, I stand by what I said in my suspension speech. Trump would be smart to reach out to the millions of people who voted for me and continue to support me and not assume that they're just going to be with him. And I genuinely hope he does that.
That's all.
Yeah, it's Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina and UN ambassador for the Trump.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. U.S. ambassador to the UN.
Yeah. Well, of course, Trump called her bird brain for a few months, and that was necessary.
that was Trump.
Anyway, bird brain there endorsing endorsing Trump. It doesn't surprise me, though. She's a Republican.
Yes.
And the Republican leader is Donald Trump. So usually, almost always, in the end, you know, they have their spats. Democrats have their spats. I mean, Kamala Harris basically called Joe Biden a racist. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And then in the end, they're holding hands together. So that's the way. You can't believe, you can't necessarily believe the criticisms of one another are as severe as sometimes they sound, because in the end they all get together, whatever team they're on, Republican or Democrat, and hold hands.
All right, Tim, you've opened the door for this discussion.
All right.
Was this speech last night from Nikki Haley a first step possible to Donald Trump picking her as a running mate?
Well, that's a good point, Fred. That is a very good question, because he hasn't announced.
That's right.
What do you, I'm going to pitch that over to Brother Ray. Ray, what do you think about that?
You know, on one hand, Fred, there's been so much bad blood between the two of them. But she represents a definable demographic of the, quote, traditional Republican Party. And if they could bury the hatchet, so to speak, if she joined the ticket enthusiastically, she could bring in voters that that Trump cannot. So that, to me, would be the argument. Now, you're asking this, is this a prelude? Well, it's a step toward a prelude. How about that?
Yeah.
I think it would be a very strong ticket, number one, female.
Right.
And
because Trump's deficit is with women voters.
It is.
So
Nikki Haley is, and I think, is it unfair to put her on a scale of moderate when it comes, because she has a slightly different point of view than many other Republicans on the pro-life side of things?
Yeah. Okay. When we say what we're talking is strategically here. Okay. We're talking strategically. We could dissect Nikki Haley's viewpoints on various and sundry issues, but we're just talking. Now, I do think a lot of the, a lot of top-level Trump supporters don't like Nikki Haley because they think she's establishment. Mm-hmm. Right? She's establishment Republicans. She's establishment Republican, which she is, but she's also, you know, I mean, Trump liked her enough to name her Secretary of the UN. She was two-time elected governor of South Carolina. I mean, she has. And listen, sometimes I think on the Republican side, everybody tries to say the other one's a liberal or a moderate or whatever like that. I would classify, me personally, Nikki Haley as a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
She's not as conservative as, say, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, but she's not as liberal as, say, Mitt Romney of Utah, for example, on a lot of issues. That's how I would classify Mitt Romney. So I think she's somewhere in between. But if you just want to talk strategically, how can she help the Trump ticket? She would be able, I think, to appeal to a lot of independent women voters who, let's face it, folks, even if Trump wins, and he's favored right now in the swing states, but let's say he holds on to that and he does win, it's going to matter who the vice president is this time.
Yes.
A lot more than it did last time. Last time, because Trump is 78. He's going to be 78 in June, and God bless him. I hope he lives to be 120. But we all seen what happens to people between the ages of 75 and 85. People can fade, okay? And Donald Trump, he's on the Big Mac train.
Yeah.
So, am I right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Now, he is a freak of nature.
If he lives to be 120, I'm going to start not worrying about Coca-Cola and McDonald's fries.
Are you going to get on the Trump train in 2044?
No, that's his diet. So, I mean, like, for people to say you shouldn't do this kind of stuff, he lives to be 120. Well, he's the other.
I say he's a freak of nature, and I've said that before, and I mean that as a compliment.
Yes.
Because he has the energy of a 45-year-old. Well, now, I will say this. You do benefit greatly from Secret Service protection 24/7. And a lifestyle where everybody does everything but dress and bathe you, okay, for you. That's helpful. But I'm still talking about the guy still gets up and goes all day, every day, and has energy that most 50-year-olds don't have. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Now, back to your point, though, about Nikki Haley.
Yes.
That would be interesting to see. His vice presidential candidate, his choice is going to matter to the people. I don't know. It'll matter to the people like me, like us here. Mm-hmm. Don't you think so?
Absolutely. And I just want to say, I would pay money.
Yeah.
If she is chosen for the debate between Nikki Haley and Kamala Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that would be a smackdown.
I think Nikki Haley would wipe the floor with Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
You know,
I was hoping he would pick Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, and he may yet. But I just don't think they jive on their personalities. I don't know that DeSantis wants that.
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
I don't think DeSantis wants it.
DeSantis is more of a disciplined man.
And he's
a strategic thinker, and he's a policy wonk.
Yeah.
Okay. He does not have the personality that Donald Trump has. Donald Trump says Ron DeSantis needs a personality transplant. That's what he says about him. Anyway, but from that perspective, now you could say the same thing about Pence. Pence was, you know, kind of low-key in that way. But so I don't think that DeSantis and Trump's personalities jive enough to be able to. They're both alpha males.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think DeSantis is having too much fun as governor.
Yeah.
In Florida.
He's racking up wins.
Well, he came out this week with the announcement. They're having their summer celebration or whatever. And he says, when it comes to lights on the bridges.
Right.
Because they light up the bridges.
In Florida, yeah.
It's only going to be red, white, and blue.
Right.
Lights. None of this Pride Month.
No Pride Month lights.
No. I just thought, brilliant idea.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll see. Tim Scott also is a name that's been brought up.
I think he picks, I said on this show last week, I don't think he picks Haley or Kristi Noem, and I joked that Kristi Noem shut down her chances. I don't think he picks Haley because the media will make an issue early on, and Kamala will as well, on all the – they're going to make her stand by all the things Trump has said or done.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kamala is going to make her – CBS is going to be working with Kamala on all this. I do think he picks a black man. It'll be Tim Scott or maybe Byron Donalds. Although –
Well, Byron Donalds, he's a congressman from Florida.
And has long been
Marco
a Trump
Rubio's supporter. Been mentioned too, but then we've mentioned this before. There's a problem with two men being from the same state.
Correct.
Yes.
VP and P, which would also be an issue for DeSantis, should he would. So I don't know how that would work out. So the name that keeps staying there is near the top is Tim Scott.
Mm, yeah. Yep.
South Carolina. Whether he'll pick him or not, who knows, from South Carolina. You know, used to, Ray, you remember these years when presidential campaigns used to factor in greatly not only the different factions within a political party trying to unify them, but also geography. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that matters much anymore.
Well, if you go back to the Mike Pence choice in 2016, I don't think geography mattered, but he was a well-known, solid evangelical, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, they helped him with the Christian vote.
Right? There was a lot of people on the right side of the spectrum, a lot of evangelical Christians who just weren't sure about Donald Trump for a whole number of reasons. Okay, mm-hmm. we don't have to repeat all that, but for a whole lot of reasons. And here comes Mike Pence, who was never going to outshine Donald Trump, but he had a real good record up there in Indiana, and he was solid, and his presence reassured Christian conservatives yeah. he could vote for Donald Trump. He needs a pick. I'm not saying to do exactly the same thing, but he needs a pick with that kind of impact this year.
Let me I'm hearkening back more to like the 50s and 60s when you had, for instance, John F. Kennedy, mm-hmm. a Northeasterner,
right.
And he picks Lyndon Johnson, from Texas as his running mate.
Yeah.
So they were trying to reach two geographic bases. Mm-hmm. Again, that's when that mattered in our country. You would see that a lot. You would see, who did Jimmy Carter pick for his VP? Walter Mondale from Minnesota. So you mm-hmm. You got a Southern governor and you got a Midwesterner.
Mm-hmm.
That used to. Reagan picked
Bush.
Reagan from California picked Bush from Texas. So you see what I'm saying? Yep. That used to matter more than it does today. I think when Clinton picked Gore, that was Arkansas, Tennessee. I think that quit mattering.
Yeah, we had a discussion about that in the news meeting today. It was the reasons people pick running mates. Right. Gore was big. He was big into the environmentalism back then, but he was also a veteran, which is something Clinton couldn't claim in 92.
And according to Gore, we're supposed to have burned up by now.
Yeah, it's very true.
But we're still here.
Uh-huh. Huh? Yep.
And he's still giving speeches mm-hmm. how yep. we're going to burn up next year.
And he's still saying things about what he calls the Book of Revelations. Which anytime somebody says that, you lose me.
The Book of Revelations, there's more than one?
Yeah, apparently.
You don't know about this?
I don't know. Maybe Al's got an extra book in his Bible. I don't know.
Didn't he also say Galatians?
Yeah. Well, Trump said two. So Trump said 2 Corinthians.
He did.
2 Corinthians.
He was speaking at Liberty, and he said 2 Corinthians.
Yeah. Not Bible.
And we've all heard the joke about the Book of Malachi, the Italian prophet. So yeah. You know.
All right, let's take our short. We probably need to take a break right here, and Fred can read from 2 Corinthians and what would you say?
Galatians.
Galatians and Galatians. And Revelations. Okay. Oh, man. We're going to take a break right here. We'll be back with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
I'd like to take a minute and have a heart-to-heart with you. If you're able, place your hand over your heart. Can you feel it? My strong heartbeat reminds me that I'm alive. See, it's the same for an unborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception and at just 3 weeks is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. That's where Preborn steps in, rescuing 200 babies every day from abortion simply by providing a mother with a free ultrasound and allowing her to hear her child's heartbeat and see their perfectly formed body in the womb. By 6 weeks, eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby is able to suck his or her thumb. Preborn needs our help to save these precious souls. For just $28, you could be the difference between the life or death of a baby. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Hope you're having a nice Thursday. This is Tim with Fred, Chris, and Ray. And we thank you for listening to AFR. All right, so Chris, Fred, and Tim. Mm-hmm. Yes, speaking in third person. We're in Tupelo, MS, and in Kansas City, KS, is our good friend Ray Pritchard. Wherever you may be listening, across the Fruited Plain or the mountains of Oklahoma. I always like saying that. It just sounds like people look at you like, mountains of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah, I drove through them. They're big.
We have one in Mississippi.
Yeah.
807 feet.
Chris.
Nice try.
You need to get out more, brother.
Oh, I've been a lot of places.
Okay.
I've been to several countries and done a lot of
That's
things.
That's not a mountain, but
you've never lived in a Woodall Mountain.
It's a molehill. You can make a mountain out of it if you want to. Anyway, have you ever been that right? You ever been along those that eastern part of Oklahoma?
Oh yeah. Have driven up through there. You know, there's reservations there.
Yeah.
I drove from Kansas City. Yeah.
We drove from Rogers, Arkansas to Dallas. And you drive through eastern Oklahoma. I'm just saying that because most people don't think Oklahoma has mountains.
It's got mountains.
If you were to survey most Americans, they'd say, Oklahoma mountains. Oh, that's where the wind
is. It's not the Rocky Mountains, but they're mountains, right?
The mountains. It's like the Ozarks in Arkansas and Missouri. All right, you're listening to, except the Sasquatch lives there.
In Oklahoma. I knew it.
You're an Oklahoma resident. Right? All right. Okay. Sasquatch or Bigfoot, whatever you want to call him. He didn't care. Just don't call him late for supper.
That's right.
All right. We have a guest. I should have gone to the guest earlier, but Dr. Brian Mueller is with us. He is the president of Grand Canyon University in Arizona. They're a national school. We're going to talk to him about an issue that's been in the news that I've been following regarding the Biden administration attacking this Christian university. So joining us is the president, Dr. Mueller. Good morning, Dr. Mueller.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Grand Canyon University first.
Well, God's been unbelievably good to this place. When we came here 15 years ago, we thought we had some good ideas, and the place was pretty close to bankrupt, 900 students on the campus, We went to the public markets to get access to capital. We wanted to build a Christian university that was affordable to all socioeconomic classes of Americans. Things just went far better than we could have ever dreamed. We sit here now. When we come back in the fall, we'll have 27,000 students on the campus. You mentioned it's a national university. We have students from every state in the union. It is a national institution. We have 95,000 students that are working adults attending online, that they're from every state in the country. And then we also have 6,000 students in a new hybrid program. We're building 80 locations throughout the country to do special healthcare education and engineering education. And so we've become the largest private university in the country. We'll, in a couple of years, be the largest university in the country.
Hold on a second. You said you had, from
a free market perspective. Yeah. Those two ideas are just attracting a lot of attention and are causing things to just explode down here in Phoenix.
Well, let me ask you, did you say 27,000 students on campus?
Yes. Yes, we started out with 900, and now we're at this fall. We'll be at 27,000, just at about 27,000, and Our plan is to grow it out to 50,000. We have enough land to grow it out to 50,000, and wow. We plan to do that in the next 6 or 7 years.
Okay, what happened? What's the story I'm talking about?
Well, we have an interesting financial model. You know, what's gone on in higher education the last number of decades is that costs have just exploded. Tuitions have been going up. Debt levels for students have been going up. Enrollments have started to dwindle throughout the country because people have just had it with the expense, with the debt levels, with the lack of free speech and all of that. We went to the public markets to get access to capital when this place was nearly bankrupt. And we got the stock out at $12. That gave us $254 million, and we put that money to use. And we've now put $2 billion into this campus. It's been ranked as high as the seventh nicest campus in the country. After 10 years of operating as a for-profit institution, we found an opportunity to go back as a nonprofit institution. And we did that transaction 6 years ago. And it has been tremendously impactful. We haven't raised tuition here in 16 years. The average student here pays about $9,000 a year for tuition and takes out less debt than the average state university student. For some reason, even though the IRS blessed our nonprofit status and it was approved by the state of Arizona, the Department of Education did not approve our nonprofit status. And we had very good reasons for doing it. We explained it to them. We did our best to work with them. But upon not approving our nonprofit status, we had to file a complaint against them. And once we filed that complaint, they started to retaliate. And so there have been investigations, and they've been looking at and they finally came up with some things that we didn't correctly disclose the cost of our doctoral program. It's absolutely ridiculous things.
You're being picked on by the Biden administration because you're a Christian school. Is that right?
Yeah, we're the largest private university in the country now, and we're going to have a greater amount of impact and influence into the culture than probably any other university in the country, and that doesn't sit well with them. And we've invited them to come down and to visit our campus and to talk to our students and our faculty, and they just won't do it. I want to emphasize it's only a couple people in the Department of Education and the FTC that are causing all this. They're the same people that just fined Liberty University $17 million for support supposed Clery Act violation. So they fined the two largest Christian universities in the country exorbitant amounts at the same time. It seems that that's probably more than coincidence.
Fred Jackson here. You're facing a fine of what, $37.7 million?
Yes, and we've obviously appealed that fine, and I've told them it doesn't matter whether it's $37 million or one. We're held as a standard for disclosures and for making sure students understand time and cost of completing a degree here, whether at the bachelor's, master's, and doctoral level. And so we will fight this. There was a hearing in the Ninth Circuit that went really well. We haven't had a determination yet, but we've hired Paul Clement. Paul Clement is a attorney that argued in front of the Supreme Court over 100 times. He handled the Hobby Lobby case and the case of the football coach that was praying after football games and lost his job. And so we believe this is going to go in our favor. It's already things are moving in our favor very strongly, and that. This will all be put to bed sooner than later.
Talking to Dr. Brian Mueller, president of Grand Canyon University. Well, we are certainly asking our listeners to pray for you and the school there. And that's stunning, the growth you guys have had. I mean, 26,000 on campus. That's a city. I mean, it's what that is. And I don't see how you've grown that fast and keep up with that. But anyway, if people want to look at maybe coming to your school as a student or doing online work, how can they do that?
Just go to gcu.edu, go to our website, and we're expecting another record of over 10,000 incoming freshmen this fall on our campus, and we're graduating 30,000 students on an annual basis through our online program. So there's lots of opportunities to be engaged with GCU, and I just want to say we've extremely grateful for the things that, that God has done here, and we're doing our best to steward this thing.
Hold on. We got one more question for you, Dr. Mueller, before we let you go. Ray, go ahead.
Dr. Mueller, first of all, congratulations on the tremendous growth of the school. It's our jaws are dropping to hear the numbers you're throwing around. It's fantastic. You're a Christian university, and there's a Christian worldview. In the face of this unbelievable growth, which is we praise God for, how do you keep the Christian foundation of the university strong when you are growing so fast?
Well, we have gone through a 7-year process where we have integrated the Christian worldview perspective into all 10 of our colleges, into all 300 of our programs. Whether it's engineering or computer science or information technology, our seminary programs, our teacher education programs, social work, et cetera, the Christian worldview perspective is integrated into every one of our programs and in almost every one of our courses. You've got to hire faculty that come from a Christian worldview perspective that, our doctoral statement is based upon the Nicene Creed, so we're very historical. Christianity from a theology perspective. And then you have to really, we are in an inner city neighborhood, and we're helping restore that inner city neighborhood. We have a 5-point plan that we have in place to create jobs, create safety, create strong school systems. What's happening in Arizona is that people are seeing what it means to be a Christian community, that yes, the Spirit's alive and well on our campus, but we've got to take that Spirit into the community. We have 45 different languages that get spoken within 5 square miles of this place. It's a neighborhood of immigrants, and we're making a huge impact. And when people see that, they start to ask questions about maybe there is something more to this gospel about Jesus than I ever thought there was. And so the impact that we're having, not just on the campus, but in the neighborhood and for the state, and believe it or not, it seems impossible to do, but it's helped us navigate this divide that we're in our society. We have tremendous support politically on the right, but interestingly enough, we have tremendous support on the left in Arizona because of the work that we're doing to restore a needy community. And that is as satisfying to us as anything that we're doing.
Well, who's your best sports team? That's what I care about.
Well, we're doing really, really well. We made the national tournament in basketball, our men's basketball program, 3 out of the last 4 years. We won our first game against St. Mary's last year, and then we were up on Alabama by 4 with 3 minutes to go. And if we'd have held on, we'd have been in the Sweet 16.
Yep.
So that program's going well. I'm going to our conference baseball championship today. We've won the last 3 conference baseball championships.
Wow.
Things are going really well here. God,
all right.
In almost everything we've done here.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, Dr. Mueller. God bless you. We wish you the best, and we will maybe talk to you soon after a good decision by the Ninth Circuit.
We appreciate the time very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That's Dr. Brian Mueller, president of Grand Canyon University. Fred, did he say they started 15 years ago? When did he say
900 students?
That's what what their membership was 9 years ago. The school's older than
that. Than that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But 15 years ago, when he came on board, they had 900 students. They were in deep financial trouble. And he's saying this fall, they'll have 27,000 students on campus.
Correct.
Plus other students. Did he say, I think, 6,000?
Yeah, online. No, didn't he say that? 40.
A ton of,
like,
yeah.
Oh, no,
yeah.
More like 95,000 yeah. online. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's unbelievable numbers.
It was founded in 1949.
They're basically become the Liberty University of the West.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Very much so. And isn't it interesting? Liberty and Grand Canyon are both in the crosshairs of the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fines that the Biden administration through the Department of Education, as Dr. Mueller explained. And as he said, all it takes is two or three zealots at a high level to, and the fines they're going after just the Christian schools on ridiculous, we'll let the case play out, but I think they're being picked on. They're being picked on because Liberty is, and Grand Canyon, because they're Christian schools.
Why isn't the Biden administration going after these public schools where anti-Semitism?
Yeah, because they believe with them, because they're an
ideological. Because they might lose voters in Dearborn.
Yeah. But this is just stunning, the growth he was talking about, because 26,000 people in that short a period of time to build the infrastructure and the dorms and all the things that you have to have to grow
like
that.
Didn't he say something like they haven't raised tuition in, he was talking fast.
Years.
And throwing a lot of stuff out there. But didn't he say something like they hadn't raised tuition in 15 years?
Correct.
Which is, again, that might be the most unbelievable.
I know, right?
I know. Yeah. I mean, you're still paying like Obama era tuition prices.
Grand Canyon University is what we're talking about. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, and Chris, and Ray, and we appreciate you listening. Next story, Chris.
Well, people that have listened to this show for a long time know that we often bring in exchanges between reporters and Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary for one President Joe Biden. I have two clips here. Neither one of these clips involves reporters named Peter Ducey. In fact, one of them here is a guy named Peter Alexander that works for NBC. I checked. He's still gainfully employed at NBC News Today. But I was shocked by that, given what he had to say in his follow-up questions to Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday about Biden announcing so-called student loan relief. Clip 5.
Just to put a fine point on it now, for the 4.7 million Americans who have received this debt relief, the average, as you said at the start of this visit, was $35,000 their relief has been for. So I guess, why don't those individuals who didn't receive $35,000 in debt cancellation deserve a $35,000 check from other Americans for what other means they would want to use it?
You're talking about
those people who didn't go to college, so they're not getting debt relief, the $35,000 that they don't get because they didn't go.
We're talking about folks who are in debt who are literally being crushed. Literally being crushed because they took
being crushed.
Financially. Okay, is that okay with you? Okay. But I know. But crushed financially. And so they're trying to get their lives back on track.
So my next question to Karine Jean-Pierre would, you say they're literally being crushed financially. Are you telling me, Karine Jean-Pierre, that you've actually done some vetting with these hundreds of thousands of students that you're about to bail out? You have vetted each one, and each one of them are being crushed financially.
She will have to defer you to the Department of Education on that.
Yeah. We'll defer you over to the Department of Education, which is a bastion of integrity.
It sure is.
Yeah. Ray, I just think sometimes, you know, she stands up there, and I wouldn't be surprised if this NBC reporter, Peter Alexander, may not be invited to the next briefing, because that's how it works there. You know, well, and the fact that, and you pointed this out, Chris, that this was an NBC reporter. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that tells me, Ray? That tells me that it is getting so bad to believe the nonsense coming from this White House that in order to have some kind of credibility, the other network reporters are now willing to ask the tough questions. It's not just Peter Ducey anymore.
She was clearly bothered by his follow-up, literally being crushed. First of all, she doesn't know. She hasn't done the research. She hasn't checked that out. She's just parroting the party line, reading the notes that are provided for her by the White House. It is significant, isn't it? I mean, we all understand Peter Ducey, but very significant that an NBC reporter if he still has his job, you never know, has the temerity to actually push back against the press secretary. Good for him. Her answer was just gibberish, basically. She got no facts at all to back up what she said.
All right. The other clip here is a female reporter. I'm not sure of her name, but she and Karine Jean-Pierre had a little back and forth over Biden and the border policies, specifically the southern border. Clip six.
The president has the authority to do something about this unilaterally. Congress is in a divided government right now. Why isn't he doing anything?
Well, why should he have to do it unilaterally? Why should we do it in a legislative way? And let's not forget that negotiated So you're right. He took many executive actions before. But in order to deal with what's happening at the border, in order to deal with a broken immigration system, you need law. You need legislation. You need it to happen in a bipartisan way.
Yeah. You know, Karine Jean-Pierre Ray says he took executive action before.
Right.
Yeah, he took executive action, Joe Biden did, by canceling everything that the former President Trump did to secure our southern border.
That's, look, back in January, what would that be, 2021,
yeah.
The border was secure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Almost nobody was getting in. I mean, almost nobody. I'm talking about the illegals were getting in. What did Biden do? He came in, as you said, Fred, he reversed all the Trump policies. In essence, he opened the doors and said, come in. And what do you know? Hundreds of thousands and millions of people came in. Now, on the tail end of all of that, as the border is still open, he's going, oh, I wish I had the power. He had the power to reverse all those policies. He could unreverse them if he wanted to. He just doesn't want to.
No, that's the bottom line. And what they're trying to do in this election season, they're trying to blame the Republicans because, you know, and the package that Chuck Schumer, mm-hmm. The Senate Majority Leader, the package that he wants to vote on now is the one that has been rejected because the package is to spend money to hire more judges to expedite right. these claims of these people coming across the border that they're facing persecution, et cetera, et cetera. So they want to do is hire more judges to get these people so they can say, okay, these people are now in the country legally. That's what he wants to do. That's his solution to this.
Look, how about more Border Patrol agents? How about more ICE officials? How about more people right down there on the border to stop the flow so we don't even have to get the judges involved?
Right. That's it. And build the wall.
Yeah.
Finish. And build the wall. Right.
Finish building the wall. No, they have created Joe Biden. Joe Biden is guilty of dereliction of duty. He is allowed and he has orchestrated an invasion of this country. That's what he's done. And now we have millions of people in the country. They've crossed our border illegally. You know, I used to live in Vancouver, British Columbia. And so that's just about 20 miles north of the border. You go into Blaine, Washington State. If I tried to scoot across the border there, I'd have border agents with guns pointed at me immediately, and I would be arrested, and rightly so. But what Joe Biden did was open up literally the gates, the floodgates, and these people have been, you know, we've heard interviews of these people crossing the border. This is scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You got to play that montage?
We have it, yes, if you would like to.
Yes. These are guys who were recently interviewed, and I say guys because they're all guys. Guys recently interviewed who have there's a hole in the gate there in San Diego, and these folks are just crossing here. Here's a sample of these people.
Yeah, clip seven.
Where are you guys from? What country?
Pakistan.
India.
India. Where are you from?
Turkey.
Yeah. Turkey. Okay.
India.
India. Where are you guys from?
Turkey.
Turkey. Where are you guys from?
China.
Ecuador. Ecuador? Where are you guys from?
India.
Sagar Baba.
India. All India?
India.
Iran.
Iran.
You're all from Iran. Why'd you come?
No freedom.
No freedom?
Yes, in Iran. Iran is a dangerous country.
know, freedom for speak, for writing, for singing, mm-hmm. for thinking.
Right.
They're not all Hispanic people, and they didn't all walk here.
No. You know, Ray, it was interesting because this reporter, it's a Fox reporter, went on to ask, okay, how did you get here? We flew to Turkey, Istanbul. We got an airplane ticket to fly to Mexico City. And then we got a bus to come up to Tijuana. And then we came across the border. So they're claiming asylum. Where are you getting the money to buy all of these airplane tickets? And we know you heard from China, from Pakistan, from India. They are all young men of military age. And this is happening exponentially every day at various points across our southern border. Like I said, Ray, we have a president that has orchestrated an invasion of our country.
Well, and we have been warned several times by people in the people who should know that there are bad actors coming into our country. There are these aren't all just refugees, folks. Some of these, well, we've been warned. There are terrorists coming in, bad actors coming in, criminals of various kinds coming in. Nobody's saying there aren't some genuine refugees, mm-hmm. but look, when you open the door this widely, I guarantee you, you're going to get bad actors coming in. And what happens, Fred? They come in, they get their little thing done by the judge, and off they go, disappear into American society. It's not a good situation. Very dangerous.
Very dangerous. And a lot of people, even those who have voted Democrat for many years, are catching on to this. And it's negatively impacting people in Chicago, New York, and other Democrat-run cities. And
the Bronx.
The Bronx, yes. So, anyway, we got to take a break here for news. We'll be right back. Steve Jordahl will be joining us. Chris Woodward, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. And taking a break for news, but much more ahead on this Thursday edition of Today's Issues. Don't go away.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.